quite have a quorum, but given the late hour, we're going to start with Representative David's bill, as he's the only bill author in the room, and we might as well get moving, and hopefully we'll have a quorum soon. Welcome to the committee, Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd move House File 2337.
And that would be great once we have a quorum.
Okay. And when we have a quorum, I'll be moving an A38 amendment, a technical amendment.
All right.
But as far as the bill itself, I would like to have Mr. Joel Michael from House Research go over the bill, and then we will stand for questions.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Michaels, if you'll state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joel Michael from House Research. I guess I'll go over the very high points on this, since I can't imagine that the Ways and Means Committee wants to get into the swamp of tax minutiae. So perhaps what I'll do is just go over the overviews of the summary and maybe not all of the overviews. So if the Article 1 relates to property taxes, and there's a reduction in the state general tax that's imposed on commercial and industrial and seasonal recreational property taxes. It freezes the levy and reduces it for on the first the $150,000 value of CI. In addition, the property tax refund for renters, the percentage that's used to that's treated as rent constituting property taxes is reduced from 17% to 15%. There's a new schedule that's provided for senior and disabled renters, and then there's also a reduction in the schedule for regular renters. The property tax credit for bovine tuberculosis farms that were infested is extended, that it expired in this bill. The interest rate on delinquent property taxes is reduced. That rate currently ranges from 10% to 14%, and now it's reduced from a range of 4% to 7%. The targeting credit is increased from a rate of 60% to 90% for K-12 only. And there's a freeze in the 2013 city LGA payments so that they get either 100% of their K-12 amount or their certified K-12 or 13-8 amount. There's a special aid allowance for Tamarack, $12,000 related to their wastewater treatment facility, and then there's the Truth in Taxation Task Force that's created. Moving on to Article 2, which are the provisions related to the income and corporate franchise tax. The allowances for the angel investment credit are increased from $12 million to $17 million. And a special provision is enacted for businesses in Greater Minnesota. The Department of Employment and Economic Development is charged with trying to increase the share of those businesses that receive the angel credit so that it's 30% of the total. If that does not occur, then the credit rate will go up in Greater Minnesota from 25% to 40%. There's a new program that's enacted that allows emerging biotech companies. These are companies that have been, that are 10 years old or new or younger, to sell their net operating losses to other corporations to essentially finance their ongoing operations. The foreign operating corporation treatment is repealed and replaced with a credit that's equal to the lesser of the amount that the corporation benefited from the FOC provision or their amount of Minnesota real property tax. That will end up targeting more of that benefit to corporations that own real estate in Minnesota. The research and development credit rate on the top tier is increased from 2.5% to 4.5%. And in addition, there's a new non-refundable credit that's provided for hiring qualified veterans. This piggybacks off of the federal changes in the work opportunity credit. Article 3.
Mr. Michael, if we can just break before we go to Article 3. I'm sorry, Mr. Michaels. We do have a quorum. Representative Biskins moves approval of the minutes from March 13th. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. Representative Davids, if you'd like to move your bill.
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 2337 to the General Register.
All right, and I see you have an A38 amendment, which is a technical amendment.
That's correct. That's to get the bill in the shape I prefer.
Do you want to explain quickly what that does? Or
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of provisions. One was just a missed cross-reference in the subtraction for from federal taxable income for corporations, and there's also an LGA fix.
All right. Is there any questions on the A38 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Mr. Michaels, if you want to continue with your Article 3 explanation.
Article 3 relates to the sales and use taxes. A couple of the important provisions is this article provides an upfront, converts the capital equipment refund for small businesses to an upfront exemption. The accelerated sales tax remittance schedule that was implemented for state cash flow purposes is repealed in this. That had already blinked off as a result of the state budget forecast. And there's a number of changes that are made to local sales taxes in here for the city of Rochester, the central cities in St. Cloud, Waite Park, and so forth, and Clearwater. These are all changes that were requested by those cities. Article 4 contains a number of tax increment provisions. The jobs bill that allowed certain projects that created private building improvements is extended for 18 months. And there are special laws for the cities of Oakdale, Apple Valley, Maple Grove, the Dakota County CDA, and two Bloomington districts, including the Mall of America district, and one in Brooklyn Park. Article 5 is the miscellaneous article. It has a new grant program with an appropriation of $1.25 million for academic internships in Greater Minnesota. This is a grant to encourage businesses to provide paid internships. The definition of qualified small brewers is modified to allow more to slightly larger brewers, the qualified brewers that have up to 250,000 barrels of production as compared to 100,000 under current law. City of Vergas is allowed to impose a gravel tax, and there's a $150,000 appropriation for border city aid. And there are a number of bonding provisions for local governments, St. Paul, Itasca County, Woodbury. In addition, this article cancels $4.3 million that the Department of Revenue has in a special revenue account that they've collected for administering local sales taxes but have not expended, cancels that back to the general fund. And finally, it creates a new 15-member Legislative Tax Reform Commission that's to report to the legislature in 2013.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
Two quick issues here. First of all, in Article 3, Section 5, having to do with the Rochester sales tax. In tax meeting the other day, I had mentioned this was a fix to the Rochester sales tax we did last year.
But could you give us a page number?
Yes. On your, it'd be page 13 of your summary.
All right.
Section 5. In the Rochester sales tax, there's something called a good neighbor provision, which will take $5 million of the Rochester sales tax and send it out to local economic development EDAs in various communities surrounding the city of Rochester. The only thing we changed there was we said within 25 miles of the geographic center of Rochester, and the only city that qualifies is the city of Wanamingo to add in there. I had said in tax committee the other day it was Wanamingo and Grand Meadow. Grand Meadow meets the within 25 miles, but there's another provision that says unless you're within 20 miles of a city with a population of more than 20,000, except on a Tuesday, when it would then therefore, no, forget the Tuesday, strike Tuesday. So I misspoke in tax committee. I said Grand Meadow and Wanamingo, and it's only Wanamingo. Grand Meadows within the miles to Austin. Also, I'd like to move an amendment on page 92, just an oral amendment. Page 92 of the bill, we need to insert an appropriation, and this money is for the study commission, if you will, to pay for expenses for citizen involvement. And I'd like to move on page 92, line 92.3, subdivision 7. Fill in the appropriations line at $25,000. And that still leaves us in balance.
Representative Davids moves an oral amendment to his bill on page 92, line 3. Goes after the dollar sign, insert $25,000. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The oral amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair and members, I'd stand for questions.
All right. Any questions for Chair Davids on the bill as amended? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I noticed with the House research document you've titled this Tax Relief and Job Creation Bill. Could you expand a little bit on the number of jobs or where you see the jobs? I think with some of the TIF districts, that would be an argument for some job creation. But any place else in the bill other than the TIF?
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson. You certainly pointed out some with the TIF provisions and the TIF provision for Bloomington with Phase 2 of the Mall of America. That will create a great number of jobs. Also, the tax relief. I would say the tax relief, the business property tax relief, that money will stay with the private companies and it can be used for companies to expand their businesses if they so choose. There are jobs involved there. Between the TIF districts and then the Angel Investment Tax Credit is one that we would say would create jobs. And I really think that a new idea here that is being used in New Jersey with the where you're basically buying a company's losses, that's the net operating loss provisions. That should infuse quite a bit of capital into some biotech companies that haven't quite got over the hump yet, and there's criteria in there. So that's not an issue where we're not looking at bailing out companies that are going down, but ones that take some time to start to generate a profit. They will be able to sell their net operating losses to companies that have profits, and that should infuse cash into those companies, and that would be another area where we should see some job creation.
Yeah. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, where I was headed with that was, you know, the biggest single cost factor in the bill, of course, is the business tax relief, and I don't see any real guarantee. I think you said something like if they choose they could provide additional jobs, but there's no evidence that would in fact happen, and that's the most expensive part of the bill relative to the states. And I suspect others may comment a little later about the source of your funding for that tax relief, but I think that's really a stretch to say that there's going to be jobs created as a result of that, and I think your own choice of words explained it when you said, as I said earlier, if they choose to. Thank you.
Any other questions for the author? All right. Seeing none, would you like to renew your Representative Lincheski?
Madam Chair, I don't have questions for the author.
Are we going to go through the spreadsheet for Ways and Means, or do you not normally do the numbers here?
If that's something you'd like to do, we can certainly do it.
Well, Madam Chair,
I'm assuming it was done in the tax committee. I'm looking at the bottom line, and that we're not spending more than we're, you know, so.
Well, Madam Chair, I would respectfully disagree, and I have a handout if I could get the pages on the spreadsheet. An exercise we asked not the nonpartisan fiscal and tax staff to go through for the committee, and is not presented here, which is, you know, what is really the cost to the state of Minnesota for mostly people who are of low income, who are disabled, to lose their renter's credit to buy all these tax cuts for business and corporate handouts. And if you look at the spreadsheet that's being handed out now, you'll see that, you know, in the bill that's in the spreadsheets that's in our packet, we're looking at a bill that is not paid for, and it shows that by year fiscal 14 and 15, we're running a deficit to pay for these tax cuts, even after we've asked all the renters to hand their renters' credit checks to all these folks. But if you look at the spreadsheet I'm handing out now, you can see the out window, and it's a $800 million deficit, members, this bill, $877 million. So if you want to look at it, this is not partisan information. This is nonpartisan information. To get rid of the commercial industrial property tax, the state tax, in this bill and phase it out, and this spreadsheet does not, Madam Chair, go out to the full point of the phase-in. I go out to fiscal 18-19 here on this piece of paper in my hand, or not I, the staff, and as you know, Madam Chair, this bill still costs more after that. The reduction of the commercial industrial property tax, or the elimination of the statewide property tax, makes this get significantly bigger. So members can just look at the bottom. Easy way to do it is look at the bottom of one page, and it's, it costs $1 billion. By 18 and 19, costs $1 billion, $1 billion deficit every year after year, to pay for this tax cut. And you flip it over, and you go, oh, well, look, the renters chipped in for part of that cost. So we have the renters. Those who are disabled senior citizens. We're going to dramatically reduce how many folks qualify for that, and they're going to turn in their $103 checks they get now to angel investors who, by the way, to qualify as an angel investor, they have to be extremely wealthy. We're going to give all businesses a commercial industrial tax cut, and we still have an $800 million hole every single year. So this is the Ways and Means Committee. This bill is not paid for. And Madam Chair, it's obviously your prerogative if you want to bring the fiscal staff for the tax committee down to walk through what's in this document where everyone can see that we're going to be $800 million in the hole real soon. And to me, it just means the future legislature is either going to have to raise taxes or cut stuff. And I think this legislature should just say what they want to do. I mean, if the majority wants to cut $800 million a year for the future, then propose the cuts. Let's see them. But instead, this is creating a huge new deficit on the backs of people who are of low and modest income. So, you know, I know I'm sort of making a speech here, but we didn't bring amendments, Madam Chair. We didn't turn any amendments in, and we're not asking the chair, I'm not, questions. I'm just, you know, framing up the bill here for people to think about. We could get into sort of the cats and dogs of the bill. I mean, there's sort of one tax increase for somebody after another in there. I mean, there's a bunch of local option sales taxes. Those are tax increases on those communities. There's a whole bunch of tax increment financing districts. Those are property tax increases for all those people. But the big bill, you know, I think the way to think about this bill, members, is we're literally taking from the lowest means people in Minnesota to give the wealthy huge tax preferences. Now, some people will argue, and I'm sure you'll hear it shortly, well, we're not giving them anything. This is their own money. Well, you know what? What this means is when we give these people a tax preference, we have to cut $800 million a year every year to pay for this bill. And that's a tax preference. That means all the rest of us either have to pay more or pay the exact same we're paying today and get a lot less for it. So it is making a value judgment. The chair of the tax committee has done a great job working on this bill through the committee process, and he can tell you we did, I think, 20 amendments in the full committee. And I think we debated the bill for 10 hours between the two committees. So I think a little discussion about the values in this bill is appropriate for the Ways and Means Committee. You know, it's been asserted that this will create jobs. If we just have all these renters give all these companies their money, we'll just have all these jobs. And you know, I don't see the jobs in here at all, Madam Chair, and to call this the tax relief and job creation bill, you know, the jobs, this is about the most inefficient way we could create jobs. This is sort of like where every one of us is a company in Minnesota. You know, Representative McNamara is a gas station, and Representative Breinert's Super Value, and Rukavina over there, he's a mine, and, you know, whatever, down the line. We're all a company. And so what the bill says is, guess what? You don't have to pay your state property taxes anymore, all of you. Doesn't judge on any of it. And this is our most reliable business tax. It's our most stable. It's the one when the economy is in flux that still comes in. And just like homeowners, when you lose your job or you don't have an income, you still got to pay your property taxes. Nobody says, oh, you lost your job, you don't have to pay your property taxes. So this tax says the businesses aren't going to pay these taxes. And it's silent on whether that'll create a job. Now, one of us might create a job. When we get that check that's given to us by the renters, you know, when Representative Pawlowski gets his check from the person who lost their renter's credit, Representative Champion, Representative Lanning, there might be someone in here who's going to create a job because they got that check. And there might be some people who are going to create a job anyhow. And then there's a whole bunch of people who are just going to pocket the check. You know, Governor Dayton put forward a jobs bill, a real jobs bill, that said, you get the tax credit if you create a job. This bill says, whether you create one or not, we're just going to give you a check. And oh, by the way, we're going to make poor people give it to you. And we're not going to pay for this in the future. You know, members, this is a really, to me, in the whole time I've been here, one of the most pitting people against each other tax bills I've ever seen. This is going to make the least among us pay for some very wealthy people to have huge tax preferences now. And to eliminate the CI property tax. I mean, one of the provisions just in my community, we're going to take a company that isn't even a Minnesota or American company, and we're going to give them local people's property taxes for another 10 years. You know, this bill is rife with this stuff, and it's a hope and a prayer that if we get rid of everybody's CI property tax, somebody in this room will create a job. And I'm sure somebody will. Maybe it's Representative Gottwald. He'll get that check, and he'll hire two people. But that doesn't mean Representative Hackbar is going to. And so we have a proposal in front of us, Madam Chair, that isn't paid for on the spreadsheet. It's $800 million a year. Governor Dayton's proposal cost $35 million a year and was paid for. And you actually had to create a job to get that through. And you know, I think most troubling, Madam Chair, we can have different philosophies about taxation, is in the whole world of taxes. You know, the tax chair and you, Madam Chair, you're in charge of $35 billion of biennium. $35 billion of biennium that we take from income tax and sales and property and estate and mortgage and deed and everything under the sun. And of that whole menu, this bill goes after the renters. I think it's a travesty. I think people are not thinking this through. I think people, if they really believe that all the businesses in Minnesota need a tax cut, I'd put the homeowners first. I mean, where's the homestead credit? If we can do this, we can bring back the homestead credit. But if people really believe this, I mean, please, you know, to pick on the folks who are disabled and getting their renter's credit. I strongly urge members to oppose this. I'm certain folks will now say this is why this bill is going to create all these jobs, and they're not really handouts, but they are handouts, Madam Chair. We spent time talking in the tax committee. I did an amendment, kind of a spoof, where I had, you know, everybody who's going to get all these tax cuts have to have a urine analysis and drug testing, and everybody who's going to, you know, who's going to get all these tax cuts, they're going to, you know, have to make sure they don't have any offenses, you know, anything on their record. They're going to have to live in the state this much time. And we sort of walked through, modeled on a number of the majority's bills to go after people who receive cash assistance in poverty, the same requirements. And we have a lot of members, and thankfully, Madam Chair, those bills I don't think are moving right now, but we're going to take people in a family of three and say if you earn over $19,000 a year, you have to do all these things to get a little bit of help. And so I did an amendment to say, let's have all the people who are going to get all the corporate welfare have to have a urine analysis and have their records checked and whatever and live in Minnesota. I mean, there's tons of tax relief here for people who don't live in Minnesota. The Mall of America provision alone, tens of millions of dollars to a non-American company. I mean, the bill is full of it. And to go after the renters, I appreciate you allowing me to speak on this rather than 15 amendments. And I think the priorities are just exactly backwards. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Anderson. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Lencheski. I feel like it's Friday again. We had heard all these arguments in the Tax Committee, and, you know, what strikes me are a couple of things. One, what the governor is proposing is that we incur more debt. That's what his jobs package is that we as a state incur more debt. And what we are saying here today with the bill that we have, Representative Davids, thank you for offering it, is that we want to have the businesses in the state to be able to keep their revenue so that they can create more jobs in the state. Because it's not government that creates more jobs, it's the businesses in the state. Mom and pop shops, and yes, even the big companies create more jobs in the state. All I've seen from the Democrats so far are offers of increasing taxes on businesses in the state and telling them that we don't want you here and we don't care for the value that you bring to the state. And I think that that's the wrong approach, especially when you've seen other states have gone that route and the results that they've had from that. You look at Maryland. They tried to do the same kind of thing of, you know, increasing taxes on folks out there, and they had a huge rush away from their state because of the tax policy. And we need to recognize that Minnesota is not an island, that we have bordering states. We also have states like Florida and Texas and all these other areas that are more than welcome to take our businesses. And I hear from my constituents every single day that say, why should I stay here? In fact, I have one fellow, he does $20 million in business here in the state of Minnesota, has 80 employees overall. And he says, why should I stay here, Sarah, when all I need is a laptop and a place in Florida? And the weather's a heck of a lot nicer there. And we can't continue to tell those folks to not come here and not to stay. And I think this bill is a good first step in that direction.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, you know, first of all, I want to ask about targets, and it's a question of you, Madam Chair. I know we've not passed a budget resolution this year relative to what the overall goal of the majority party is relative to the budget, but have you informally given a target to either the Tax Committee Chair, you or the Speaker or somebody, as well as the K-12 Finance Chair? I mean, we had a bill that went through the other day that $430 million out of the state reserve, and I think most objective people would say that that's putting us at risk. The Commissioner of Finance did. So I guess the fundamental question is, what kind of a budget are we working from here? Do we have a goal that you've set, or are just we on a freewheeling spending situation?
Well, Representative Carlson, I wouldn't call it freewheeling spending. I'm certain there's been discussions with leadership and direction given to chairs with their particular bills. In the case of Chair Davids, he was told to have a balanced bill, that he wouldn't be given more money. So I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
I think we just heard with the spreadsheet that was handed out by Representative Lencheski that it's pretty dubious to say this is a balanced bill. But, Madam Chair, you know, one of the things that I've expressed concern about in this committee and in other committees is the fiscal management, quite frankly, of the majority party here. You know, when you talk about a balanced budget this biennium, I can't forget the $750 million in tobacco bonds that are going to be paid off over 20 years and are going to cost the state $1.2 billion that you used in part to balance the budget. You added to the SHIF to do that. But if we look at the next biennium, you know, the February forecast says that there's going to be a shortfall of $1.2 billion. We still owe the schools roughly $2.4 billion. I think that includes the property tax recognition shift, if I recall. But that's mainly to the schools, bringing us to roughly $3.6 billion for the next legislature that they're going to have to resolve. And that's before we even begin to talk about the modest level of inflation, if we were to recognize that. That's a footnote, as you know, with the Department of Finance or MMB's projections. And now we have these big bills going through that neither of which, the K-12 finance bill or the tax bill, that begins to resolve any of these issues. And yet I hear rhetoric saying that somehow we've got a balanced budget. Well, it's a balanced budget that's based on quicksand, if you ask me, with the way we've gotten through this biennium and the way we're setting up the next biennium. And when you look at the spreadsheet and what that adds to the deficit, when you begin to project that out over the next biennium and several biennium after that, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars that you're creating a shortfall with. So, Madam Chair, I just have to say that this is not the direction to go, and I would request a roll call vote when you get to that point.
All right, Representative Carlson requests a roll call vote. Are there any other comments on the bill as amended? Chair Davids, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, and just to one of Representative Carlson's comments as far as the jobs, and I can talk to you later offline, but Commissioner Franz did say in committee that the research and development credit would create jobs specifically. But with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2337, as amended, be recommended, pass, and sent to the General Register.
Okay. Mr. Smith, would you take the roll, please?
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Breinert.
No.
Representative Biskins.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Gottwalt.
No. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
Come on with it.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth.
Aye.
Representative Kahn.
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Lanning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Representative Lencheski.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Rukavina.
No.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Westrom.
Aye.
Representative House.
Aye.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Aye.
With 16 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2337, as amended, is recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Davids, and tax staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Cornish, if you'd like, we can take you next, I believe. Representative Cornish, welcome to the committee. I'll move House File 2415. You recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. I understand that this is a department bill.
Yes, Madam Chair, members, this is a Department of Corrections omnibus bill, which I think each section has been approved by the governor's office.
All right, would you like to briefly explain your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, Section 1 basically is elimination of a duplicative supplemental performance measure. Back a couple of years ago, Representative Hillstrom had a measure put into a bill to authorize an additional report. And now that report is going to be included in an overall performance report, and there's no need for it. So that takes away the requirement for that report and results in an $8,000 savings. Section 2 of the omnibus bill is provides for the Department of Corrections of the Fugitive Apprehension Unit to apply for search warrants on their own. Currently, this apprehension unit's been in existence for a number of years. They go after the very bad, the escapees and the people that are in prison that violate their parole. And this unit goes out to get them, and this would just allow them to go along with several other organizations that are listed in the statute that it can apply for search warrants on their own. Section 3 is the Challenge Incarceration Program boot camp. This was going to be more restrictive language to restrict certain peoples from coming in to the program. Those serving a sentence for a crime that resulted in death or great bodily harm to a victim or involved in the discharge of a firearm, or offenders that are required to register as a predatory offender or civil commit or sexually or mentally ill would no longer be allowed. And as Representative Hillstrom was the author of this bill also. And Section 4 through 7 allows for the use of web-based victim notification for release of offenders from the Department of Corrections. The Minnesota Choice is a program the department's in the process of implementing. When put fully into operation, will centralize the process, reduce costs, and provide victims and correction agents with information simultaneously. Section 8 is a statutory cross-reference that adds Department of Corrections Fugitive Apprehension. No, that's, excuse me, I must have a repeat here. Let's see here. Section 8.
John?
That's just a repeat. That's just to take care of a cross-reference for the Department of Corrections Fugitive Apprehension Task Force that I talked about before.
All right, are there any questions for Representative Cornish? All right, members, we also noticed the Grunhagen bill, House File 467. The Cornish bill actually shows a savings in the department because of the there's no need to do the report. And so we would like Representative Grunhagen's bill to allow for a prison garden program. The first year of that program is an $8,000 cost, and I would move at this time to amend House File 467, the second engrossment, onto House File 2415. And then we will have balance. And Representative Grunhagen is in the audience if anybody has any questions. Any questions? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of amending House File 467, second engrossment, onto House File 2415, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2415 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. You're on your way to the General Register. And Representative Grunhagen, thank you for being here this evening for
thank
questions.
Thank you.
All right. I believe the next bill that we'll take up is House File 1945, which is what I believe was on the agenda. Am I right? It was noticed as House File. And what we need to do is that the Senate file passed today. So we now have to move the Senate file, which we've included in your packet. So I'll move House File 1586. And then I'm guessing that Representative Gottwald would like to insert the House language onto Senate file 1586. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I would, and I would make that motion.
All right, so Representative Gottwald, in order to get the bill in which you'd like to discuss, moves House File 1945 onto Senate File 1586. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. All right, you've got your bill in the order that you'd like to start, but I understand there's also an A1 amendment. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I'll look for a little direction from you. The Senate file 1586, which passed 64-0 in the Senate, included or incorporated that language as well that's included in the A1, so I'm not sure that we need it at this point.
Actually, we do because
we
you just asked us to put the House language onto the Senate file. So we're dealing with the House language, so I believe you will need the A1 amendment.
I would move the A1 amendment.
And if you'd explain to the committee what your A1 amendment does.
Madam Chair, members, the A1 amendment actually came from Representative Liebling, who shared some concerns. As we walk through the basics of the bill, and I'll do that in a moment here, one of the sections we created is for affirmative defenses. This was a section we put together to help protect health care providers, particularly long-term care providers and hospitals and others, from unintended prosecutions based on caregiving. What we're trying to do here is go after felony neglect of vulnerable adults, the kind of intentional withholding of care, withholding of food and so forth, and abuses that results in grievous bodily harm and even worse. We did not want to go after caregivers who, faced with a choice between one or two bad choices, I've got to go take care of this person and I have to leave this one for a moment and something happens, that we would then suddenly charge them with a felony. So we crafted this section, and Representative Liebling, and I want to thank her publicly for her support and her help, brought forward this additional language you see in the A1 amendment to provide some additional requirements on the part of the prosecution if they are in fact going after somebody, so that that further protects our caregiving community. And so this entire bill is an extreme collaborative result of so many people working over many years. I've been very honored to carry it this far. Members, I would ask for your support on the A1 amendment, and then hopefully you can also support the bill. Madam Chair, maybe we should move the A1, and then I'll have one closing comment.
Right, and I think we need to amend the A1 amendment because it's written to the House file. I'd defer to staff for what we...
Madam Chair, we've amended the House language on, so I believe this will work.
So we can leave it as is because of... All right. Mm-hmm. I have been corrected. So any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. All right, Representative Gottwald, if you'd like to
Madam Chair, just real quickly,
I have a letter from the Department of Corrections.
Yes, that was what I was going to mention, okay. Madam Chair and members, is that we have a letter from the Department of Corrections indicating that the cost involved here will be absorbed for the 2013 fiscal year. And so with that, Madam Chair, I hope that we will move this to the floor and get this passed finally. I think it's high time in Minnesota.
All right. Any questions for the bill author? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 1586 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much,
Chair and members.
Chair Gottwald. The last agenda item is House File 2582, Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would like to move House File 2582 to be sent to the General Register.
All right. Thank you. And it's my understanding you also have a technical amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have the, where is it at? The
A12-0742 is what we have.
That's correct.
And would you like to explain your amendment?
Certainly. Amendment is Section 3 on advice of Senate counsel is redrafts the original bill, federally mandated penalty, making it simpler and easier to understand. All other changes are housekeeping and make no substantive changes.
All right, any questions on the A120742 amendment? Seeing none, Chair Gunther renews his motion to adopt the A120742 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House File 2582 is the UI bill, Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council bill. It is made up of Representative Mark Murdoch, Tim Mahoney, and Carly Mellon, and myself. Because of congressional action last summer, Minnesota must make changes in order for the Minnesota employers to continue to receive federal tax credits worth over $750 million per year. Put money from penalty on applicants into the trust fund. Put penalties from employers whose failure to adequately inform the department for reasons for separation causes an overpayment and benefits money put in the UI trust fund. Members, this bill doesn't spend any general fund money. It spends unemployment compensation money, and it does a whole lot more, but I think you're interested primarily in the fiscal aspects of this bill, and I'd be glad to answer questions.
All right. Committee members, do you have any questions for bill author? One of the advantages of going last on a late night meeting. All righty. Representative Gunther, if you'd like to renew your motion.
I would, Madam Chairman.
Representative Gunther moves that House File 2582 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. You are on your way to the General Register. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Unless there's any other business I'm not aware of, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, going back to my earlier question about targets or other bills that are coming forward, would it be possible for you to share with the minority caucus what the targets for the various bills are going to be and what the bottom line budget numbers are going to be? Being that we don't have a budget resolution, it would be, I think, helpful to the minority and probably many in the majority that might be interested in knowing what road we're on.
Well, Representative Carlson, we're not planning on doing a budget resolution in the traditional sense, if you will. There's for the most part, we've been trying to get bills to balance out, or they're really not moving. So if you'll look at the committee website and the number of bills sitting in the Ways and Means Committee, there's quite a few of them, but there's, as you know, no money on the bottom line. And
Madam Chair, the reason I'm asking that question, I know at this point there's not going to be a budget resolution, but apparently by your comments earlier you indicated that the tax committee chair apparently had a target and you felt he was within his target. I'm assuming that your feeling was the same for the K-12 bill. You know, if we had a House budget resolution, we'd be addressing issues whether the budget was increasing or decreasing. There's still the capital investment bill coming through, and there's the question of how much is going to be authorized in the end for debt service. That's another big bill of the session, and I don't know how many miscellaneous bills that you might possibly have that go through that have some fiscal cost. You had a couple of them tonight. It was very modest, but you know, those are dollars that are being expended. And so without a budget resolution, it would be helpful, I think, to both caucuses if, as committee chair for Ways and Means, you could let us know what the overall budget goals are.
Well, again, Representative Carlson, we're not spending, bills aren't going through here spending excess money. You saw tonight we balanced off two policy issues so that the net impact was zero. In the case of the Department of Corrections bill, the agency wanted the policy change and was able to absorb it in its current budget. But relative, you also asked about the capital investment bill. There is, as you are well aware, debt service for what would be the average cost of a bonding bill on a 10-year rolling average, which $775 million, which is about $5 million in debt service in the first year that is put into the budget forecast. So I wouldn't look that we deviate above that number for spending and debt service on the capital investment bill.
Well, Madam Chair, I know what's in the forecast, but that's a different question than what I'm asking in terms of what you're actually authorizing for a capital investment bill.
Well, again, we're not going to bust that number. I can't guarantee that.
you're not going to bust that number, but are you going to be below that number, and if so, how much?
At this point, there's still discussions around what that number will look like, but it will be less than $775 million.
But the question I'm asking, what are you going to provide for authorization, which will drive the size of the bill, but then the timing of projects and so on can vary that to some degree. So the question I'm asking is, when you're dealing with the capital investment chair, there's really two numbers, what you're going to provide for debt service. Well, really three sometimes if you were going to provide any cash. I don't know how you'd do that, but you know, theoretically you could be providing some cash, some bonding authority, but you have to also give that chair some indication as to what you're authorizing within that $5 million that you were saying is available for use for debt service.
Right. And
is it going to be four or three? You know, that when you say it'll be below the five, but I guess I'm just asking for more openness in terms of what the budgetary process is.
All right.
If you could at least think about that, and maybe the next time we meet, let us know.
Certainly.
And maybe it would be helpful to even have a spreadsheet of what has been spent so far.
Okay.
And what you're planning. I mean, David Bishop always handed one out. Lauren Solberg always handed one out.
And then they always had another one in their breast pocket.
Well.
Sorry, I probably shouldn't have added that point, but there was one spreadsheet and then there was the one they carried in their pocket. So I don't do that. But
well, you know, if you've got two, you can share both.
I don't.
Fine. But I think and there's the public that's observing what we do as well, and I think it would not only be helpful for us, but I'm talking about transparency, and
I think
that's important in this process. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Meeting's adjourned. Yeah.